I'm Marianne Kolbasek-McGee, Executive Editor at Information Security Media Group. I'm at HIMSS in Orlando speaking with CISA Deputy Director Nitin Natarajan. Welcome.
Welcome. Great to be here. Good seeing you again.
Yeah, indeed. Thanks so much for doing this. So, over the last several months or year or so, what have been some of the most concerning developing trends that we've been seeing involving cyber threats facing the healthcare sector? Any new or emerging developments that are especially worrisome for the healthcare sector right now, and why?
I think the largest concern is that we're continuing to see a significant amount of attacks targeted at healthcare institutions across the nation. We're seeing it in urban America, we're seeing it in rural America, and we're seeing it with a population in healthcare that traditionally was never attacked. Right? Traditionally, we protected healthcare institutions. We would never attack a healthcare institution that would have an impact on civilians or an impact on patient safety or loss of life. We're seeing continuing to see that level of attack against healthcare institutions across the nation, and that within itself is very concerning. When we look at anyone's top three list, top five list, and whether we're talking about ransomware or other types of attacks, healthcare is always on that list. And I think that, to me, is what's very concerning right now.
So in recent days and weeks, we've seen some major cyber incidents on the healthcare sector, the most recent being the Changed Healthcare Optum cyber attack that's proved to be very disruptive for many entities in the healthcare sector. What lessons are emerging from this so far? It's still kind of early in. Anything in terms of indicators of compromise or of being prepared? You know, the lessons, what lessons are most important at this point?
So I think it's still a little bit early to tell a lot of the details. We've tried to be transparent and share information that we do have available. A lot of our partners have shared information as well, the Health ISAC and others. So we want to continue to make sure people know what we know, especially in the early stages of an incident. I think when we look more broadly, a lot of it comes down to basic cyber hygiene. It comes down to patching. It comes down to knowing what software and hardware you're purchasing. It comes down to, in terms of phishing and those types of things, not clicking on the links and on the email. I think it reinforces our need to message a lot of these basics, and I think a lot of organizations look past the basics, right? They go, oh, that's too simple, or that's not going to be the vector of attack. But what we see time and time again in sectors across, you know, as we look at all 16 critical infrastructure sectors, is that those are the vectors of attack, and there are those basic fundamental elements that we need people to continue to focus on that are going to make the largest difference in our general cybersecurity across the nation, whether that's multi-factor authentication, whether that's patching and updating, and those types of things really do make a difference across the nation.
So we also have seen some attackers that are actually going after the patients whose data they extort. Any sort of advice for entities in terms of dealing with these sort of evolving threat, attackers who are just kind of being very novel in how they try to shake down either an organization or the patients? What can organizations do to kind of buffer that a bit?
A lot of it comes down to knowing what software and hardware you have, knowing what potential vulnerabilities you have, reacting to those vulnerabilities and addressing those vulnerabilities as quickly as possible. I think there's a lot of lack of awareness as to what people are buying these days, and we need to do more. We need people to take a deeper dive into their software. But frankly, on the other side, we need to get industry to build software that is more secure by design and more secure by default. So the onus shouldn't be on us as the end user to understand every aspect of what we're buying, especially given that a lot of those buyers may not have the deep technical knowledge, but really on getting industry to pivot and to be able to build software and hardware that is more secure, that allows us to build more resilience across the nation. I've also said for a while now that, to me, healthcare facilities are one-stop shops. It's not just about intellectual property. There's PII, there's billing information, there's all these types of data that, frankly, you're not going to find in a lot of other sectors concentrated in a single place. And so if I were somebody who wanted to cause harm, or if I were somebody who wanted to exfil information and then sell that or potentially ransom it, it's a one-stop shop. And I think that also makes healthcare a prime target.
You mentioned a good point about the one-stop shop and also vendors, the big vendors, whether it was Change Healthcare or other vendors that are not healthcare-specific being targeted. Any lessons in terms of healthcare sector entities being prepared for if one of their major vendors gets hit and it not only disrupts them, but it disrupts their partners, supply chain sort of things?
I think that's one of the lessons I think we'll see coming out of the current incident is that need for resilience. And we've really been trying to make sure people understand how to build resilience. We're never going to prevent every incident from happening. We're never going to protect every organization until we have a magic bubble that can protect us. So the question is, how do we bounce back quicker? How do we build resilience into our system that allows us to recover from backups much more sooner, that allows us to understand our supply chain vulnerabilities, to know that we're dependent upon a product or a chip or an entity coming from this location, whether in the United States or internationally, and being able to mitigate that potential vulnerability and risk. I don't think we've spent enough time really understanding our supply chains, especially in healthcare. When you look at the volume of products that a healthcare institution is dependent upon, both hardware, software, but frankly just day-to-day medical equipment and supplies, and making sure that you understand those vulnerabilities and that you have the redundancies built in to mitigate risks if one entity were to go down.
So now the Biden administration has been focused on strategies for strengthening cybersecurity in critical infrastructure sectors. What are the most important aspects of this strategy that you think the healthcare sector should be focused on implementing at their organizations right now? What is it that they sometimes fall back on, they lag on, but they really need to kind of pump it up?
I think one of the biggest things is reporting, is making sure that we understand when an incident has happened. I think when we look at reporting, it's not about telling the government and we put it in some magic box and nothing ever happens with it. You know, CISA truly wants reporting from the basis of how do we take that information, how do we mix it with what we're seeing from partners around the globe, from academic researchers, from information from the intelligence community and others. How do we put that together to help understand and get information out about indicators of compromise and other types of information that are helpful not only to that victim, but frankly to the sector or sectors at large? Because that information is not just going to help that individual, it's going to help other organizations protect themselves from a similar type of attack. And that really is the fundamental basis for what we want to receive that reporting for. And I think that's an area that we need to do better across all the sectors. Rapid reporting will allow us to help you and to help your fellow healthcare sector partners to better respond to that type of an incident.
And what are some of the most concerning vulnerabilities these days that the nation states and other bad actors are exploiting in healthcare that entities should also be paying more attention to, whether it's patching or, you know, being aware that these systems are even in their environments?
A lot of it is patching, and you know, I recognize it's easy for us to sit here at the federal level and say, you should patch, and you should patch quickly and immediately, right? It's not always that simple. In some cases, obviously there's downtime concerns and just the complexities of patching and cascading impact from that. But I think really being able to understand the importance of patching rapidly, the importance of having your systems designed in a way that allows you to do that, really can make a difference. I think it's also going back to the basics, you know, making sure that you're looking at things like multi-factor authentication, making sure that you have, you know the software and hardware that you're buying, which often we don't. And so I think those are the types of things that we're seeing. Also, IT modernization is a huge issue. When we look at a lot of systems, a lot of attacks across all the sectors, we're seeing a lot of very outdated and antiquated software and hardware. I've been a lot of places where people are very proud to show me Windows 95, and with a level of pride that is concerning. And I think that we need to invest in that as well. And it's hard, right? And when you look at profit margins in healthcare institutions are not extremely high, and then when you look at where do we invest, it's not an easy decision to make. I think this is frankly also why we need to get this discussion out of just the CISO community and elevate that into CEOs and boards of directors. When we look at risk, that risk acceptance shouldn't reside only with the CISO. That risk acceptance should be sitting with the CEOs and boards, and they need to be aware of the risks that they're accepting in their organization due to the inability to invest. And we can't invest in everything, so I fully understand that. But that risk acceptance needs to be at that CEO and board level.
And we're hearing so much about AI-enabled healthcare, machine learning healthcare, and the advancements that these things could bring to healthcare. On the flip side, what's most concerning to you in terms of AI in the hands of the bad guys right now for healthcare?
So those are the conversations we're currently having. Is, you know, CISO is looking at AI in three different ways. One, we're looking at how should we use AI and how could AI be beneficial to our mission and from a cyber defense perspective. We're trying to understand how the 16 sectors are going to use AI, especially healthcare and public health, and understanding where, how much AI are they going to use, what is that going to look like. But the third piece of that we're really focusing on is how are our adversaries using AI potentially against us, and whether that's to escalate frequency and severity of attacks, whether that's to help with coding and that type of aspect, whether it's looking at some simple things such as ransomware and being able to do it at a scale utilizing AI that we can't, whether it's helping with being able to differentiate those phishing emails from being real or not because of the use of generative AI and language capabilities. So we're really looking at that across the board. We're still in the early stages, but we want to really be able to understand what our adversaries are planning, because they're going to do this. This is not, you know, that a technology that's only going to be used for good. There is the potential for it to be used for bad, and we need to better understand so we can stay ahead of the adversary.
And finally, what are some of the latest or most critical CISA resources that the healthcare sector entity should be utilizing more, maybe to help them combat these top threats that we're seeing and to just overall improve their posture?
So if I had to pick one thing, the one thing would be our cyber hygiene scanning. You know, we have the ability to provide free cyber hygiene scanning and to help people understand what vulnerabilities they're facing, to get a report on a weekly basis, to understand what vulnerabilities are their organization is exposed to, and then marrying that up with our known exploited vulnerabilities and our KEV listing to really help people understand what's being exploited by adversaries and to focus. But we've actually published last fall a toolkit with our partners at HHS and with partners in the private sector to actually share a whole list of tools and resources that are available free of charge to help folks build their resilience within their organization. And we encourage folks to look at that. We encourage folks to work with our regional teams. We have cyber experts and physical security experts in communities across the country. Encourage them to engage locally so we can get access to the services. But that enrollment, if I had to pick one thing, that enrollment in cyber hygiene can really make a difference. We've heard from organizations around the country how valuable it's been to help them identify where they need to focus efforts. And they've been able to patch and remediate those vulnerabilities very quickly. Some of the data we've seen so far, that is within the first 3 months of enrollment, people are able to address 80% or more of their vulnerabilities, which is a significant change in their landscape.
Well, thank you so much, Deputy Director. I've been speaking to Deputy Director Nitin Natarajan. I'm Marianne Kolbasek-McGee of Information Security Media Group. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Great seeing you again.
Thank you.